Or do you want to go up against a guy who thinks he's a machine and has optimized every part of his process? He's just exactly enough to be the best. He lives, everything in his life is lined up to fucking headlock you and kill you. He doesn't have emotions. He eats exactly like he's supposed to, sleeps exactly, trains exactly everything the coach says. You're like, I have to wrestle that man? Isn't there a test? Is he a machine? That's not a person. Hold on. I want to live. I want to pull out of the competition. I don't want to do this shit anymore. Who do you want to be?
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Blutzer here with Doug Larson, Anders Varner, and we have a cool guest today, Dr. Mike Israetel, and we're going to be diving into some really scientific shit. I'm super excited. I'm super excited because I had heard about this man, and then I met him at the CrossFit Games this last year, and I was really pleased by the conversation. Sometimes you hear all sorts of impressive stuff about someone from certain backgrounds, and then they're just boring. So this is not Mike. So setting the expectations super high for you.
Great.
Don't screw this up.
Yes. I will make sure to underhand them greatly.
Will do. Now, first off, we have a couple sponsors. First being Organifi. Great supplements. Was it Anders? We were talking about the green juice because Mike's not familiar with Organifi. Maybe we can.
Not much of a supplement person.
Not particularly.
Maybe we'll get into it later.
Yeah,
maybe we'll dig this one. This one's
cool.
Easy. It gives you a little scooper.
No,
you get all
basing.
Your vitamins and
There's
minerals.
No, you don't have to.
No free basing.
That's the kind of
free base if he wants it.
I call them supplements. Yeah. But my parole officer seems to disagree with me. He can't hear this, right? So we're good.
No, he doesn't know you're in California right now.
Sweet. Oh yeah. God, that's another issue.
I'm like checking you for like ankle bracelets now. Like did you break out of your house?
I've got a chip. They put it in the chip now, like a RoboCop type shit.
Like it's like injected into your skull.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's what you got.
Is that why the helicopter just flew overhead?
Looking for you. All right, folks, time to wrap it up.
No, Organifi. It runs. They have a lot of really great supplements. They led with their green juice, which is phenomenal. Took that this morning, they also have a lot of other things. Got red juice, which is Doug's favorite.
That's my favorite for sure. I take the red juice, the probiotic pills, and the turmeric pills.
Ah,
those are my three go-tos.
And then
every morning.
Well, the pills I usually take in the evening, but the juice I usually have with breakfast.
Baller.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, and I drink the gold before bed, which
I don't have any of that yet.
Wait, what's
I
the gold
need,
one?
I need to get the hookup on some gold.
That sounds
the
special.
Gold juice.
The gold does have some turmeric as well. Reishi, mushrooms, and a few other things, some magnesium, things that help your body relax. So
oh, yeah.
Some anti-inflammation type stuff and relaxation stuff.
You do the medicinal mushroom thing?
It depends on what context we're discussing the medicinal mushroom thing.
All right, before
medicinal mushrooms.
The other medicinal
mushrooms.
Bro,
they are a type of medicine, man. Mine. you know what?
Already.
Mushrooms are one of my favorite foods, so I have them often in actual meals.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if you talk to somebody who's like really deep into mycology and you start dropping medicinal mushrooms into the conversation, a lot of times they'll say there's not really such thing as medicinal mushrooms. Almost all mushrooms have some therapeutic effects or something like that. So like reishi is good for inflammation, and then you've got like shaga, which is as well. Actually, I'm going to get them all mixed up on what they're good for, but they all have like different properties. One of the things I like about the brand Organifi, because I was buying a bunch of, and I still get a lot of just, I high dose certain types of mushrooms, but the Organifi puts in a little bit of mushroom mix in there. I think they have a little bit in the red juice, and they have some in their gold. Mm-hmm. So they're starting to implement that, those mushrooms, and or a lot of people just call them like a lot of culinary mushrooms are medicinal as well. So they're implementing those in their products. So I'm a huge fan. When I found that out, I became a bigger fan of their product line.
You know if there's any benefits, just regular mushrooms, like beyond just like they're quote unquote good for you, like cremini and shiitake and whatnot?
Shiitake is got some benefits. I don't know the exact benefit of shiitake. I actually have a book on mushrooms sitting at home that I've been meaning to read because I do want to get into exactly what each one of them are doing. I do know that for the digestive system, your body digests mushrooms a lot easier than a lot of plants in some animals. And because the fungi there, you probably know this, Mike, are closer to like, animals than they are plants. They're not really plants. So because of the way that they metabolize, their food is the same way we metabolize food, except for they do it on the outside of their body versus the inside of their body. Whereas we do it on the inside.
It is a plant or animal, whichever. When you start digging into that rabbit hole, you kind of find out that mushrooms just run everything.
Oh, yeah, like, mushrooms run everything, and they're not from planet Earth, so.
No, they're out there.
As far as, like, running an ecosystem.
Yeah, like, the entire ecosystem of what we, like, the communication pathways between trees, the fungus, even, like, the moss on the ground when you get out into the jungle, there's just, like, thousands and thousands of species of mushrooms that are creating this thing that we just walk through. We're like, oh, cool.
Well, I think evolutionarily, they're like, what... created the bridge from plants to animals. Anyways, we can get into that some other time. We'll interview somebody that knows more about this than we do.
We're put that one on the list.
Pay grade for sure.
our other sponsor is Thrive Market, which, by the way, for Organifi, if you want to get those products, you get 20% off if you use the code SHRUGGED. Get 20% off all those. And then we also have Thrive Market, which is basically just really healthy food you can order online. If you live in a part of the country where your grocery store isn't stocked with lots of organic and sustainably farmed, regenerative farmed foods, this is a really great place to go. For me, I like to shop at Thrive Markets, not just for my own personal health, but for the health of the planet as well, because they do a really good job of making sure that where they're sourcing their food from is sustainable in nature.
Yeah, talking with Gunnar, like, product quality seemed to be by far like the number one focus of that company. Like you were saying, like it's all organic, it's all non-GMO. Like going to the farms and like actually talking to like the people that are making the food to make sure that it's exactly what they think it's going to be. They're not just like calling bulk suppliers and saying, "Hey, we need a bunch of peanut butter, just send it to us."
Yeah,
right.
Like it's all very high quality.
The piece on not just sustainability but regenerative things for the soil, making sure that everything is not just we can keep this level here. They're really pushing it forward. And how do we give back to the environment that the food is built in, from the soil to the plants to the people that are out there farming it? It was really impressive being in their headquarters and just seeing the entire operation. I mean, you walk in and it was pretty much baller from the second we stepped in to the time we left, from the products, the food, the cleaning supplies, everything that they showed us was just on point.
Yeah, if you want to increase the quality of your life and the quality of products that you have in your household, go to thrivemarket.com/shrugged. It's like it's kind of like Costco, and it's a membership program. So you'll pay X amount of dollars per year, and then that's how they make their money. And then you're going to get really low prices on super high quality stuff. And if you use thrivemarket.com/shrugged, you'll actually get your first month of
60 days. $60 in food?
$60 in food, 30 days free membership, and free shipping. So go make sure to check that out. All right, now we're going to dig into this interview. We're going to talk to Dr. Israetel here. Can you give us a little bit of a background? I my first impression of you was that you were like a nutrition guy because you're from RP Strength and Renaissance periodization.
Oh shit.
Spelling bee.
Yeah. But if you want to find you on Instagram, what you guys are up to, it's just RP Strength.
RP Strength on Instagram, yep.
Yeah.
We met at the games, and I started learning about your background. I'm curious. Can you fill us in on that real quick?
So, I was born in the former Soviet Union in 1984. Ironic.
Wow.
And I don't know if irony is the technical word for that. And then I
that's awesome.
Came to America with my parents and sister and grandma in 1991 to the fabulous Detroit, Michigan.
Real upgrade.
It actually was a fundamental, complete upgrade. Yeah. Which is funny. Testament to how shitty communism really is. Welcome to Detroit. We're like, unbelievable. They're like, holy shit.
Careful.
Where
are
you from? Like,
huge following in Siberia.
Oh, yeah? Well, I know a lot of those people personally. So I've wrestled many of them. These are bears, right? So, and then so I grew up in the United States. I still speak Russian, which is kind of cool. And I did my undergrad at the University of Michigan in movement science, which is a kinesiology. And that's actually where I met Nick Shaw, who is the co-founder of Renaissance Periodization. And then I did a master's at Appalachian State in strength conditioning, where I got a chance to work with a lot of D1 athletes, stuff like that. I was a personal trainer in New York City for 1 year, working with super duper rich business people, which are really actually pretty cool in real life. Mm. One percenters, man, stealing everyone's wealth by producing valuable things that we all enjoy. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So
most people that don't like one percenters don't know one percenters.
Oh yeah, giving me them a some of them are dicks, but a lot of people are dicks.
That's right.
So in any case,
I think a lot of one percenters just have like hoards of cash and they're just like keeping it in their basement and like keeping it out of society instead of most of their net worth coming from like owning companies.
Wait, where do you guys go?
Where do you keep your money? Mine's in that sand pit right now.
That's good. Your dog was digging in that, by the way. I have mine in the basement. But
I was eating a piece of pizza when I buried it. He must smell it.
I keep mine underneath my hot tub.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Yeah. No one would really ever look there.
No. Mm-hmm. It's there with the organite.
So, the fuck is that?
Don't ask, don't tell.
Don't worry about it.
If you have to ask, you don't need to know. Finally, I did my PhD under the legendary Dr. Mike Stone at East Tennessee State University. PhD is in sport physiology, which is just science of taking good athletes and making them better. And then I got a chance to work as the head nutrition consultant for the U.S. Olympic training site there. We had cycling and we had weightlifting. And then I was a professor at Central Missouri for 2 years, taught all kinds of courses, nutrition, training, etc. And that's where I picked up Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, habit, addiction. And then I went to Temple in Philly for 2 years, working with Dr. James Hoffman, who is a co-author of mine. He's actually the head author on the recovery book. And now I work full-time for Renaissance Periodization because we got so big that I couldn't go back to work anymore. And Nick Shaw said I can't work for the university because he needs me to do a lot of other stuff. So been a professor for a while. And then athletically, I wrestled in high school. I didn't do anything. Actually, on my way here, the Lyft driver was like, so have you always been an athlete? Like in middle school? I'm like thinking back to middle school, like, nope, video games and like man titties. That's what I had.
Wait, you had them or you were like seeking
like,
them?
Like, no, I had them. I need bigger packs. Well, that way when we all started training. In middle school, I was completely sedentary. High school, I did wrestling, which really changed my life for a lot of ways. And then I fell in love with lifting to get stronger for wrestling. I did powerlifting in college. Then I started training like a bodybuilder when I was in grad school. Fell in love with that. It's lust, really, if we're being specific. And then I've done a couple bodybuilding shows, which I progressively sucked less and less, but I still suck. And then I started competing in jiu-jitsu after I got started in it 4 years ago, 4.5. And I'm actually not terrible at jiu-jitsu. Turns out being really strong is kind of cool when your job is to try to hurt people.
Got a big strength background, and then you wrestled. Like, that's a great transition.
Totally, yeah. It was a pretty smooth transition, to be honest. I actually don't know how people pick up jiu-jitsu if they hadn't wrestled. It must be a really awkward couple of months of like, why are people on me? What's the smell? Why do things smell? Jiu-jitsu smells really bad.
It does.
Oh, I can go if I walk into somebody's house and you know the jiu-jitsu. I know. I'm like, oh, I just follow it to their dirty hamper.
Yeah, you should keep that outside of the house. Yeah. So, so I kind of I'm super passionate about bodybuilding and super passionate about jiu-jitsu, and I also know shit or whatever. So
super passionate about getting people really strong.
That's the idea: strong, lean, more jacked, and really happier.
Yeah,
I'm a happy person.
Where do you come from more, or where do you like to kind of spend your attention? Is that more on the nutrition side of things, more on kind of the? I mean, you Google your name, and there's a gigantic article about everything hypertrophy that exists with your name attached to it. From getting strong, maintaining strength. You've gone way too far in this. Where do you kind of focus your attention, or is it really across all of the spectrums?
It's a little bit of everything, but I'm getting incrementally more like niched into just a couple of things as primaries. One of the things is like at Renaissance, we have so many experts, and most of the people that work for us are PhDs in sport, natural science, and accomplished athletes in their own right. And a lot of them have the really good subspecialties, like Dr. James Hoffman is a very close friend of mine and co-author of many of my books. He's much better at sport stuff, like actual fields, like actual sports. I don't mean to be rude, but you know, like bodybuilding, we do this. Not very athletic. So, you know, like movement stuff like volleyball, sprinting, et cetera. He's really good about that kind of stuff and about training and periodization and planning for that stuff. So while he's been focusing on that and he's kind of a resident expert on that, I've been more into hypertrophy. So I'm like supposedly one of the hypertrophy experts or whatever in the world, I guess. I don't know. It makes no sense to me. But I know a lot about – I'm very passionate about trying to get as jacked as possible.
Yeah.
And this is my pathetic current best attempt at it, although I am carb depleted, so – I'm usually bigger. I'm usually bigger, damn it.
You're a fucking monster.
Look at me on Instagram when I'm pumped. people are like, this guy's not that big. Holy shit. Okay. Yeah. So so in any case, I'm like fascinated with hypertrophy, and that's both the training stuff and the nutrition stuff.
Yeah.
Because if your pursuit of strength, as long as you have a decent muscularity and you're not screwing up your nutrition too bad, nutrition can only yield you so much for strength. It's a lot. But it's only so much. With hypertrophy, if your nutrition is not as good as it can be, you're limiting yourself for sure. Like powerlifters, kind of just like if you eat enough protein and you have plenty of energy, mm-hmm. you'll get really strong. Bodybuilders, you don't ever speak to a guy who's like 300 with veins and you're like, so you could just kind of eat whatever? He's like, yeah, just get hungry in there. You know, like, no, of course not.
Yeah.
So nutrition pays a really big dividend. So I've invested myself a lot into the very technical side of nutrition, very technical side of hypertrophy. I love the little nuances, but I also often find myself when I'm lecturing and stuff and writing books, I have to regress back to talking about the basics, which I absolutely love, because a lot of the people asking about the minutia shouldn't be, because they don't know the basics.
Yeah.
So that's my jam.
And one of the pieces that is not talked about too often, and you guys are starting to get into this, is more of the recovery stuff. When I was checking out some of the hypertrophy articles, I was really impressed with here's the rep ranges where you are doing yourself no good. Mm-hmm. We're getting past training volumes that your body's actually able to recover mm-hmm. to. Where do you see a lot of people falling into those holes?
Man, so funny enough, so when we wrote the recovery book, we actually developed a recovery hierarchy, kind of like a pyramid of at the bottom. Am I allowed to swear on this, by the way?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. You can swear the fuck you want.
Sweet. I don't ever swear. I'm kind of more like conservative that way. So.
Oh. Okay.
I don't cuss. As soon as someone says they don't like, oh, I don't cuss, I'm like, who the hell says cuss? What the fuck is wrong with you? It's fucking swearing.
Are you over 18?
You know, you can have those weird thoughts you have in your head. No one knows about it. overly repressed and shit. So, or you just tell people about them and get yourself in a lot of trouble. So, in any case, we developed a recovery pyramid, right? And at the base of the pyramid is the most important thing you can do for recovery. And as you go up each level, it's incrementally less important until you get to the top, which is just like a tiny little, some details, right? Mm. The bottom in our estimate of the recovery pyramid for sport training is what we say training within your MRV. And MRV is shorthand for maximum recoverable volume. It's the most volume you can chronically train at without doing more than your body can recover from, given normal conditions. The huge take-home message of the bottom of the pyramid being trained within MRV is it doesn't matter how much sleep you get, how much food you get, how many supplements you take, how well-structured your life is, you can always select a total training volume per week that will crush you anyway, right? So the first ingredient of making sure you're recovering well is just not being overly enthusiastic about your program to the point of where you just pick a bunch of shit, put it in, and there's nothing you can do to dig yourself out of the hole. So first of all, selecting a logical amount of training. Then after that, we get into some more details. So, I don't know if a lot of people do that, but some sure as hell do. And it's usually the people that are very enthusiastic about their fitness, which is great. But a lot of times, it's the a la carte addition of fitness methods. Because, you know, it's all about Instagram. Let's just put that out there. I mean, clearly, life is about Instagram. Like, bullshit journeys and shit. That journey to Instagram where shit's really happening. That's where all of life is. So what do you get with Instagram? Well, if you can brag about the most kind of shit you do, if you can be involved in 50 different sports, people are like, oh, my God, you're a multi-sport athlete. You're so amazing. I want to be you. You know, shit like that, right? We all just want to create. Life is about creating jealousy in other people, and it just drives them insane. So, right? So people will be like, I'm powerlifting. And someone at their gym's like, hey, have you ever tried like some gymnastics moves? And like, oh my God, that's so great. I'm going to add that. And like, do you want to try weightlifting? Yep, add that. CrossFit? Yep, that too. And hey, there's a bodybuilding show coming up and you're looking decent. Time to diet and add bodybuilding moves. Now we got five things where maybe we were at 60% of our MRV with just powerlifting alone. And now all of a sudden we're at 120. And they're like, oh, I'm having trouble recovering. What can I do? The answer is nothing. The answer is get rid of like three of your hobbies or do a whole lot less of them and put them in the normal context of training. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you get a coach that's overzealous as well. Like if they're a young coach, they're going to want to just smash their people. I was talking with the head strength coach of the Colorado Rockies when I was doing some work with them back in 2006. And that was what he was saying right when we got there was that most strength coaches that he knows that work with professional athletes and have been doing so for decades inevitably come to the conclusion that when they were younger, they did too much. Mm-hmm. Like doing too much was the thing that got their athletes hurt. It was the things that made them not recover, especially in baseball. They have to play a game every single day. They perform and play every single day. They practice every day. They play a game every day. That there's not as much time to recover when you play seven games a week and then like a doubleheader on Saturday.
Baseball is completely insane, first of all, because of the volume of competition that they do. But that's funny enough, exactly how we coined the term maximum recovery volume. We had to. So Dr. James Hoffman and I continued to run, and a lot of the strength coaches East Tennessee, we all worked with teams. We were consistently running into the same problem with multiple coaches, and the problem was we had to convey to them that simply adding things is not the way you become amazing at sport, that if you're going to add too much, you exceed your body's ability to recover, and then it's not like extra credit, because a lot of people come at this from a purely psychological perspective. You know that, I'm sorry, trite fucking 1983 wrestling movie bullshit motivational crap, like you got to fucking train more than your competitor. I'm like, question, what if he's overtraining? You fucking do more than him, bro. Like, what? Right? So this idea that you can never do, like, you fucking work hard. Like, where does it say, where have you been to a gym, and the fucking sign says, manage your training stressors, like, logically. Like, that fucking says that. It says fucking outwork or whatever. Yeah. So especially young coaches show up, and they're like, let's just fucking do everything. And then it was our job as sports scientists, we help structure their training and especially structure the balance between lifting, conditioning, and sport practice to be like, something's got to do one of these. Are you giving me a hint to change my microphone? Or
no, I'm just I'm coughing.
Okay.
No, you're good.
I hope you're okay. All right, sweet.
I'm great.
Sweet.
Yeah. I was watching a video of Josh Koscheck, UFC fighter, like very, 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 very good wrestler throughout his collegiate career.
Yeah, amazing.
And the strength coach on the video basically went up to him and was like, hey, man, more is not better. And he looked him right in the face and was like, hey, I've been doing this a long time. Trust me, more is better. And like that was the clip that the company that was making that show chose to put out to the world. Even if that's not, even if you lost the context there, they only showed that one clip because that sounds badass. Yeah. And so that's what gets delivered because it sounds very sexy to say like, you know, fuck that. I'm super powerful. I'm an amazing athlete. More is better. Yeah. I can handle it because I'm super alpha.
Sure. That's entertainment at that point. It's not really logic. And so coming from that mentality.
Going back to Instagram.
Yeah. James and I and all our fellow coaches were working with all these coaches, and we had to explain, because they didn't speak technical sports science lingo. So we had to explain to them a concept of there's a certain sort of tangible, slightly variable amount from which your athletes can recover, and anything more isn't a matter of psychology or whatever, is just not going to make them better, and it's going to make them worse. So we had to give them this idea that there's this box, and you got to fill in the box, and if there's too much of one thing, you got to take it out or put it on the back burner to put other shit in, kind of like a trade-out system versus just an addition system. So we came up with the term maximum recoverable volume because it was a one fucking shot term. We could be like, well, you're going to go over their MRV, and they're like, what's that? Like, and then we just quickly explain, like, your athletes can only recover from so much. The thing is, a lot of the coaches are working for, they weren't first-timers. They were good coaches. And as soon as you explain to them, it's just very simple logic, like, hey, there's only so much you can do, and then everything else is bad after that, they're like, huh, fuck, you're right. So how do we structure it? They're like, ha, sports science. So then we'd help them out. So, but before that, there was no term to describe that idea.
Yeah, I've never heard it said so simply, for one.
That's how simple it really is, though.
And, I remember coaching CrossFit athletes. They would come from one coach, come to me, and then I would program for them. And by the way, there was a point in time where I was doing too much, too.
All of us. I think it's a rite of passage, actually.
But I remember getting athletes, and they go, well, my old coach had me doing this. And I look at the program, I go, what the fuck? Like, this is just way too much. Mm-hmm. And then I dial it back, and they're begging for more and then doing more when I'm not looking or not telling me about it. And then they're like, I'm not, and then they're having like really, they're having recovery issues, but they don't know. They think it's because of something they're eating or not eating or whatever.
Of course, magic shit.
Yeah. So that's, how do you deal with an athlete who comes from a coach where they're coming from this super high volume? They come to you maybe. I don't know if you're coaching these types of athletes. They come in.
I have, yeah.
What's the conversation you're having to help them see?
I physically intimidate them. I say, if I catch you training, I will break your fucking legs in the squat rack. I don't give a shit. It's not a holy place for me, you know? On a serious note, what I usually do is if they, you just been nice to them for a while and don't do that. Here's why. You know why. And then sometimes you have to kind of have a sit down with athletes like that. And you say, okay, here's the deal. Do you think that I'm not invested in your excellence as an athlete? And they're like, no, of course, that's why you're my coach. Like, do you think I want you to be the best? Yeah. So why do you think I don't program as much training as you want to do? Because I'm trying to hamstring you as a joke to both of us? Because if you do well, it looks good for both of us. Also, I'm not a fucking cocksucker. I don't hamstring you on purpose for no reason. And they're like, no, I get that. And I'm like, okay. What kind of athlete would you like to meet at your highest level of competition if you're competing with someone? Someone tells you about this athlete. You're about to go up again. Let's say you're a wrestler. Be like, oh, man, the guy you're wrestling is kind of fucking a little bit fanatical. He's addicted to training, and, like, he'll train more than he has to just because he feels like a piece of shit inside, and if he doesn't train, he just doesn't feel right. You're like, okay, I feel like I can frustrate or exploit a guy like that. Like, he's got fucking head issues. Be like, or do you want to go up against a guy who thinks he's a machine and has optimized every part of his process? He's just exactly enough to be the best. He lives everything in his life is lined up to fucking headlock you and kill you. He doesn't have emotions. He eats exactly like he's supposed to, sleeps exactly, trains exactly everything the coach says. You're like, I have to wrestle that man? Isn't there a test? Is he a machine? That's not a person. Hold on. I want to live. I want to pull out of the competition. I don't want to do this shit anymore. Who do you want to be? Which athlete do you want to be? Which athlete do you want to go up against? Because sport science, the application of sport to training, is really just turning a hobby into a systematic machine-like entity. Anything that has been mechanized, systematized, is fucking unbelievable. Kind of like a little bit of an obtuse analogy, but modern warfare, right? When you go up against the NATO armies, the United States, England, etc., you're not going up against a bunch of guys with guns shooting like this. You're going up against a very intelligent system that positions people exactly how it's supposed to, that gets intelligence how it's supposed to. It's like that. So you know when you go in there and you see one guy, you're like, clearly I'm already in line of sight for some other guy. Yep, absolutely. Boom, sniper blows your head off and you're dead. Versus you go up and you're just like, hey, we're going to start an army. Like, what do? We fucking shoot as many guns as possible and kill as much enemy as we can. We're going to try really hard. We're like, yeah, sweet. See you guys next week. See you for the war. Right? So it's one of those things like everything that has been systematized and is logically applied and the logic is sound is just going to make you better. That's just how it works. You know, you don't go to a hospital and you're bleeding out of a fucking wound and they're like, all right, like, we're going to really try to save you. They're like speaking in medical technical terms and sewing your ass up. They have systems for everything. So why not make your coaching a system? And that's scary. That's how the East Germans, well, steroids aside, everyone is using them. That's how the East Germans and the Soviets and stuff won so much shit back in the day, because to some extent, the Western countries, sport was still a traditional endeavor. It was a lot of hunches. It was a lot of, well, my coach says this. In China today is a counterexample to that as well. They had a systematic approach to sport. I mean, in Russia, the idea that you would do more than what your coach tells you is insane. Other people would see you and be like, do you have a workout right now? I'd be like, no, I'm just doing extra squats. I'd be like, what the fuck are extra squats? What's wrong with you? Like, you have a program. So if you just convey that kind of message to people, like, I am an engineer, you are a machine, let's optimize you. They're like, fuck, I want to be a machine. Sweet. That means no training today. Come back for 2 hours tomorrow. As opposed to just, and then you can, I actually like, for some athletes, you have to mock them to some extent. You have to be like, no. Training is for you to feel good about yourself. Do you feel frustrated today and like you're not a champion? Just go and fucking just grind squats so you can feel great. And they're like, yeah. But like, it's not going to make you any better. You know that already. But you're going to feel good. They're like, well, I don't want to be better. Well, then fucking go and grind squats. Like, you have to choose at some point. Is sport something you're doing to optimize performance, or is it therapy? Now, here's the thing. If it's therapy, fucking God bless you. That's awesome. a lot of people train, everyone who's training at regular gyms, a lot of them train for therapy. It's fucking grind shit. It's awesome. It's great. But if you are competing in sport, there's a trade-off there. And if it's for your therapy that you're doing it, hey, you may be fucking real therapeutic, and then you come out and wrestle a guy, and he snaps your fucking head off, and you're like, but I feel good about life. He's like, sweet, here's your second place medal. Fuck off.
Perfect. I think there's a great place to take a break, and we come back. Who the fuck knows what we'll get into?
Thanks for watching the show. If you'd like to learn more about how to improve your snatch, clean, and jerk, we have a free 55-page ebook you can get at flightweightlifting.com. It has sample programming specifically for weightlifting, weightlifting how-to technique videos, and other tips on how to improve all of your lifts. Go to flightweightlifting.com, and you can download that ebook for free.
Download it now.
And we're back with Dr. Mike Israetel. We started chatting, and you're one of those guests that we can't
shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like it's like you get off. It's like we take off the headphones and the podcast didn't stop. It's like, oh, what grinds your gears? You know, like but we got chatting about how most athletes are not in touch with their bodies, but may think that they are. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. So this is especially I was gonna say problem, more challenge. It's a challenge in distance coaching, where you have a coach that writes your programming from, you know, hundreds of miles away or whatever, which is very common now with the internet and everything. Mm-hmm. With that, with the internet, man, this newfangled thing we've got.
It's here. It's staying.
Is it really?
It's, yeah, I heard it was like it's a fad.
You know, funny enough, I have to say this sort of very, very infamous economist, Paul Krugman, has is deified by a lot of people and hated by a lot of other people. And he had a quote, a really nasty quote. I just wouldn't want to have made this quote. He had a quote back in, I think, the early 2000s, late 90s, that he basically said, you know, the internet, in my estimation, is going to go nowhere past like an interesting alternative to like a phone call or something. It was just like grotesquely, this is like the most wrong you could ever be. It sucks to have sex, you know, otherwise the guy says like a lot of good shit, says a lot of dumb shit too, but he's got plenty of smart guy. And it's
I
just
think
like,
he's
just
less than
wrong.
50% though.
That, yeah.
Paul Krugman, I think, is more wrong than...
I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah. We could get a technical economic discussion if no one here wants that. But
I got another show where we'll do that.
There you go. So, but...
Somebody I can talk to.
Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure.
Perfect.
But it's just, it just sucks to be dead wrong. But in any case, so the internet's here to stay. the internet's here to stay, and we got a lot of distance coaching, which is excellent, right? Because now people... Because, yeah, somebody contacted me earlier, and they were like, hey, someone's looking for a local bodybuilding coach. Do you know any? I'm like, people still fucking know local people? Like, I don't know what fucking, I have no idea. What the fuck is a local bodybuilding coach? Like, what is it that your coach needs to do with you that he needs to, well, in person, I guess, if you like extra intimate bodybuilding coaching.
But it depends how experienced you are. Like, if you're a brand new beginner, then like, you might want someone in person to, like,
trainer.
Show you the exercises.
Totally,
but
exactly.
If you're advanced, you just need someone to give you some guidance and a plan.
Posing coaching is also to be done in person. But in any case, distance coaching is amazing, but one of the challenges about it is fatigue management with your athletes, because like say if you train people in person, they show up to the gym, you can fucking tell if they're beat down. Right? And it's deload time. Like, why? Like, because you're on set number two, warm up for leg press, and you're going to failure now on five reps. Like, you're supposed to be able to do 20 of this. You're done, right? We're deloading, we're eating more, etc. But with distance coaching, a lot of times some of the actually very good subjective measures of fatigue, because it's been shown that if you ask athletes how they feel, if they're honest, it's actually very reflective of their physiology, right? So, like, if you're in touch with your body, it is actually possible to be in touch with your body productively and give off physiological states, but the ego gets tied up in there, right? And it all, you have to filter through that, and that's a big challenge with coaching. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you say, hey, Betty, that's a fine athlete's name.
Anyone named Betty is just a rock star athlete.
Beatrice.
I think Betty, and I think Grandma.
Ethel.
Automatically.
Yeah. Be like, oh, man, doesn't matter what you clean and jerk, because Ethel's in the next flight after. She's going to rack 200, no problem. So, Ethel, you know, you're like, Ethel, how is your training feeling? How are you feeling? Do you feel fatigued? And she knows what that shit means. But she has an agenda. She wants to be super tough. And she wants to impress her coach. And she's going to be like, I feel fine. I feel fine. You guys ever get that? Like, you actually talk to them in person or like over Skype and they do this thing with you. Yeah. Like, I'm okay. Like, what's up with your head? Are you in court? where were you on the night of the 15th? Like, oh, nowhere. I was nowhere at all. Okay. So, and you know, you can't quite tell that through email, but sometimes they're like, oh, no, everything's great. I feel fine. And it takes a while for the coach and client relationship to catch up to the fact that there maybe have been some illusions there and that the client is actually much more fatigued. I wish it was just that problem, because then there's the opposite problem. It's not as common for people who go out and pay for coaching, of people who think everything is a nightmare scenario. And you're like, how do you feel? They're like, I'm really sore. We're like, we did 6x10 squats yesterday. They're like, I'm going to die. And you're like, okay. Is there blood in your urine? No, but I feel like there could be if we keep this up. Clearly, you're not ready for high-level training, right? So it's tough to get through the ego and expectations and the image athletes want to project to a coach that it's really – it comes down to, I think, some personal psychology in the coach, where if you have a good client, you're invested, and you want really long-term development with a coaching-client relationship, you have to, at some point, get to the same level playing field where you're like, look, no bullshit, I'm on your side. I am a service provider to make you better. You can lie to me if you want, just as productive as lying to your therapist. Can you imagine, like, paying for therapy? You sit down on the fucking couch. He's like, so, how's life? You're like, but I'm fucking golden, bro. Why are you here? Because I... Why did you try to lie to me? Like, because I hold you in high esteem. I didn't want to, like, talk about my problems with you. Like, you pay me to do this. Are you crazy? So a lot of times, you know, you realize that if you're a client, you're listening to this, you pay a coach to accurately sense your fatigue state so that they can intelligently adjust your program. Fuck would you lie to them for? Do you lie to your macros calculator too? Like, eat 5 burritos, and you're like, I'm going to put that as 5 grams of carbs. It's like 25 calories, and we're good. You're like, oh, it's a machine. Who cares? So, and people do, oh, fuck, never mind. People lie to their coaches about diet adherence all the time. I've coached, most of the people I've coached have been amazing, but myself and other people I know in the industry have coached people who are also amazing, just a different part of their life journey, I suppose. And you'll be like, how's your diet? Because they're not losing weight when they're supposed to be, and you're cutting their calories pretty hardcore. So you're like, physiologically, you should be losing, like, I don't know, fucking 2 pounds a week. And they're like, it's good. It's great. And you're like, yeah, so you're pretty strict? Like, I'm totally strict. And then their Instagram, like, I'm in Vegas, party let out, and they're, like, squirting cream cheese into their mouth. And you're like, I don't even know. How did you get a tube of cream cheese? Where is that? Like, novelty store for that shit? And you're like, the next day, like, you see that post. You like that post on Instagram. And the next day, you're like, diet's okay? They're like, totally. You're like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this as a ballet? I don't know my part in this shit.
But so a lot of it just really comes down to, like, people need to understand kind of their training age as well when you talk about these stressors. And how do you assess that with them and make sure they're, like, having the perfect macro plan doesn't really matter for so many people. So what are some of the assessments that you're giving for finding their real training age and making sure Ethel's on the right page?
Well, intake's a good part of that. Before you start working with clients, you got to ask them a lot of shit about what they're doing. One of the interesting things is you have to get pretty specific about how long have you been training, because the word training is not really well-defined.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I've messed around with weights for 15 years. Okay, how long have you trained full body to the extent that you were sweating after workouts? Oh, like 6 months. Okay, so your training age is 8 months or whatever cumulatively, right?
Right.
So a lot of times you have to really dig into what they consider training. Sometimes you'll get nonsensical feedback. One of my friends, Dr. James Hoffman, laughs about this all the time. So you'll give people a list of lifts, right? Because you're their strength conditioning programmer, and they'll have to fill in how strong they are for 10 RMs or 1 RMs, right? And it's just compound lifts, like overhead press, squat, upright row. So every now and again, you'd be like, it's in pounds, right? So it's like upright row, 65 for 10. Right? Makes sense. Shoulder press, like 75 for 10. Right? Right. Squat, 75 for 10. And you're like, are you able to walk? Is that an error? And they're like, oh, I guess it just slipped my mind. Ha, 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 it's supposed to be 175. And you're like, oops.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just stuff just doesn't add up. So a lot of times when people give you feedback of where they are, some incongruities have to be examined. And then as you examine them, you get the feel of who they really are. Yeah. And a lot of times with most athletes, after that, what you have to choose is how general or specific approach you're taking. The cool thing, the downside with working with real, maybe beginner athletes or kind of psychologically beginner athletes that aren't used to systematizing and training, is that just general good advice gives them fucking head over heels incredible improvements. Okay, here's what I want you to do. I just want you to make sure most of your meals have protein in them and eat till you're full. They're like, okay, that's it? Like, that's it. Do you know what protein is? They're like, I think so. Like, okay, sweet. I'll find out in a couple weeks. So they do that, and they're like, oh, my God, my numbers are going crazy. I'm getting so strong. This is amazing. You're like, excellent. Later, months later, years later, you start to manipulate their nutrient timing very particularly. You start to do, you know, intentional massing and cutting phases, all this other stuff, and then they benefit. But if you have an athlete come to you and they're like pretty well advanced and you're like, just eat plenty of protein and like fucking carbs, they're like, I'm paying you a lot of money for this. And you're like, oh, you want the advanced? Here it is, right? But a lot of times there's a mismatch between that where you get beginner clients and you're like, I want you to follow this exact macro plan to the letter. And they're like, what the fuck is a macro? And you're like, okay, clearly we're ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, one thing is really, I struggle with it so much. I was literally in Costco this weekend, and you go over to the book section, and it's like,
there's a book section at Costco?
I actually love going to the book section at Costco because you know that millions of people are reading whatever the fuck is there. Like, they don't, there's no like filter for it. It's like, Whole 30, I'll read that. There's 700 of them. But right next to that is...
It's a bunch of average books.
RP's got to get into fucking Costco.
Well, this is the thing.
I know a guy.
So it literally is... So right next to the Whole 30 book, which is probably a really good book, is the How Not to Die, Only Eat Kale book. Yeah. Right next to the Blue Apron book. And it's like, if I knew nothing about...
And most people don't.
And no, so you go in, it's like, eh, I'll just take that one. That should work. As a coach, understanding nutrition, because nutrition is kind of this, like, everyone looks to that right away. And there's a lot of books on it. There's no books on training age. It's like, have you done Windler? Well, that's a pretty good place to start for everyone. Have you done a 20-rep back squat program? Everyone's probably, you know, if you've been training 5 years, you've probably at least heard of it. So how do you kind of assess... Or just where do we start people to get them into just here's like a your basic program for squatting without all the bullshit that goes along with it.
For sure. Funny enough, we're actually developing a product currently at RP.
I love that.
I think I can. Boom. This man is paid on the side by to set me up with bullshit promos.
He's a plant. We've had him on a couple of shows
Costco
now, just
is
so he can say
right
that
now.
On this show. He won't be on the next show.
That's right. So I think I can say this because it's going to come out in a couple of months anyway. We're actually developing what's called a beginner bundle, and it's a very simple book about how to basically train, basically diet, basically recover, and basically approach the psychology of the matter. And then some templates and videos to show you how to do all the beginner shit, and a couple of programs that are like, hey, your way. It's more or less like 5x5 type of stuff to start with.
Yeah.
And before that, 5x5 strength focus, it's all really technique focus. I think it's kind of a battlefield there with especially accepting new clients, especially not in person. Because in person, you kind of figure out quickly, like, squat, and they're like, okay, it's not a squat. it goes here. Or like when you tell someone to squat, you guys ever have this, and they pick the barbell up and they
put it. Oh, yeah. I love that one.
Are you going to do that with 400 pounds?
It's usually followed by like some like, stop. Like whatever your thing is. Like you've done it all wrong already.
You climb under the bar. So in person, it kind of gets sorted out. But you know, if you're a real committed coach, and you're working with individuals that you think may not know what they're doing with technique basics, video assessment is really good.
Yeah.
Just be like, just show me what a squat looks like. And you don't tell them shit. You're like, what's your squat? And it clearly, if a guy sets up and dunks it, you're like, all right, awesome. Advanced programming for you. Non-technique-based programming. And then if they look like shit, a lot of times if you're a distance coach, I like putting people in touch with local actual coaches. Like, if individuals, I've had clients before, they're like, yeah, my squat sucks and I know it. And I'm like, are you a member of a CrossFit box? They're like, yes, but I don't go to open workouts much. Like, start going and or pay someone there, the head of the box, to coach you in squatting and in pulling. And I can actually send him a sheet of movements. I want him to learn you up in about 3 weeks and come back. And they do that, and then they're competent with the lifts. But I think I've had situations before, unfortunately, where I assumed people knew what they were doing, and then too late, like a mesocycle in, I watch videos of them deadlifting, and they're like, ah. And they're like, oh, you're still alive. A testament to your back.
I've definitely seen that, yeah. It's scary.
It's totally scary.
And then you're like, oh, fuck.
I could have killed that person.
I fucked up, yeah.
We've been doing 5x10 deadlift. Like, what the fuck did that look like?
Yeah.
You, like, stop watching the video with two reps, and you're like, I can't even see this. Assuming they sent the email, they're alive still. I don't even want to see the last 8 reps. So it's definitely a matter of assessing where they are. And then a really good tip, I think, for people working with new people is if you have an amount of volume that you use for programs, sets, total sets and reps and weight, there's never a problem, almost never a problem, starting on the very low end of that for everyone that you're not sure about, and even some people you're sure about, because you can always work up.
Yeah.
But starting on the high end
yep.
can shit them out the other way before we have a chance to work back.
That's tough as a coach.
Totally. Because a lot of people will quit after a week and be like, the shit was too easy. Yeah. Like, you dumb motherfucker. It was a progression.
I just met you.
Yeah. I wanted to not kill you. Next week will be harder. I've had this. I used to when I was a personal trainer. Sometimes, like, depending on the kind of client you get.
I'm going to hire you as a coach.
Don't do that. It's the biggest mistake.
Actually, on that note, do you think there's some value in giving them really simple movements that are hard to fuck up with, like, some decent amount of volume on the very first day just to make them very sore and then have a really easy next, like, 3 or 4 weeks? That way they go, okay, this is legit, and then you build them back up.
I was going to say exactly that. When I was a personal trainer, sometimes I would, especially when clients are like, you know, I've been with other, like, personal trainers, and they just can't. They basically say in some way or another, like, they can't beat my ass like I want. And I'm like, good fucking God, this will be the easiest thing I do. they'll say things like, I never feel it in my legs and I want to feel it in my legs. I'm like, you had a personal trainer and you couldn't feel your workout in your legs. Like, no. When's the last time you were sore in your legs? Like, I can't remember. I'm like, oh, motherfucker, we're about to jog your memory now. Like, you see that little squat rack there? You see that little leg press right after that? And see that little open space where you get a lunge right to the elevator, take it down, vomit blood, pass out. I don't have to see you for the next couple of days. That'll be you. So I think every now and again there is value in really proving your worth and just fucking them in the ass.
Yeah.
I
can always tell when someone's a new personal trainer because uh-huh. that's how they speak about everyone. They're like, dude, I totally fucked that guy up. Dude,
yeah.
I gave him this. I gave him that. Yeah. He was so sore.
Totally.
I'm like, do you think that's good? Is that what you do to everyone, every workout, all the time?
Exactly. Yeah. I'll follow clients out, like, after the gym and fuck them up even more, like, just in the street. You know what I'm saying? You thought the workout was over, motherfucker. Yeah. Give me your purse. When you're strong enough, I'm not going to spend any of this money. When you're strong enough, you're going to come fucking take it from me, bro. So there is, like, that temptation as a personal trainer to prove yourself. And unfortunately, sometimes it has to be done. If it doesn't have to be done, I would say starting out on the easy side is a really great idea. And then a lot of it you can talk about. These people are human beings. A lot of people who pay for personal training are more intelligent than average. They're more intellectual than average. They make more money than average. They're not completely ridiculous people. So you're like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. This week we're starting out, we're going to feel you out. I promise you, you will get results because you're new motherfucker. Your muscles will respond to anything. You're going to burn fat, build muscle. We don't have to train that hard. We're going to make things harder. So if you think this week is too easy, perfect. And then when they think it's too easy, they're like, perfect. And a lot of personal trainers and other coaches just don't communicate with their clients. So you'll have the situation where they're like, I don't feel it. And they're like, you're not supposed to feel it. Let's go to the next exercise. And you're like, that could have been like 30-second explanation of why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. So
there's a lot of dead space with personal training a lot of times. That's been my experience. You do a set, you got to wait 60 seconds and then a lot of personal trainers, what I've witnessed, is stand there and they just bullshit about
fucking life, bro.
Like the football game this past weekend or something like that when they could be educating the person.
Totally, yeah. Totally. And sometimes the person isn't paying to be educated, but some people are, and you have to make sure to align that conversation with them. The personal training is interesting because you're in some sense being paid to hang out with a person for an hour.
Yeah, that's true.
My only rule about that, like I've taught a bunch of classes on how to be a personal trainer at the university level. My only rule about that is if you're executing the workout properly, what you talk about between sets doesn't have to be a lot. It's whatever the client wants to talk about and whatever's not professionally like super fucked up. I think everything's fine. Mm-hmm. But that's a big if. Because my next rant about that is personal trainers who prioritize the conversation over the workout, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I have actually literally seen individuals train people and do, like, 5 total sets in the course of a 1-hour session.
Yeah.
the most awkward situations is when the personal trainer clearly wants to talk to the guy, but the guy's like, what do we do next? And he's like, yeah, so right over here, they warm up, and then the guy talks for 10 minutes, and the guy, like, being trained is like, okay, I'm ready for another set. You like, clearly want to fucking train. Maybe they're, like, a super rich dude, and the guy's like, so what I was thinking was, I got some investment plans, man. I really want to talk to you. It's super unprofessional. It's ridiculous. But as a personal trainer, you have to be able to resist the other side with a client. And I guarantee you, as soon as I say this, all of you guys are going to be like, had that happen. The client is in fucking pain from training, good pain, breathless, and they think they're slick, and they want to delay the next set by fucking asking you about shit. And be like, so we got next set soon, huh? You're like, yep, 15 seconds. We're going to go again. So, like, what are your favorite lifts? Like, fuck you. My favorite lift is seeing you die on that leg press, and 15 seconds is up. Go. They're like, fuck, I can't distract this. But sometimes, especially when the client's an esteemed individual, they can use the bullshit tactic to string you along, and then you get less work done. The thing is, that's why it's so important to come back to why the fuck are we here in the first place. Like, motherfucker, if you want to hang out with me, I got another service where I just hang out with people. Yeah, they pay me and I hang out with them. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
I got it all figured out?
Yeah. I got one of those. Yeah.
There you go. But, like,
charged by the day.
Exactly. I charge by the second. but, like, the thing is what's the number one priority? Is to train them and do it well. After that, whatever. As long as we get that done, who cares? Because months later, they're going to thank you. I've actually had clients thank me, like, thanks for pushing me. I know half the time I didn't want to work, but you made me work. I'm like, what the fuck do you think my job is here? Is to fucking make you do what is good for you in the long term, because it's a long-term investment. If you've just bullshitted with your client for 3 months, 3 months later, what you got? Some good conversations? Is that why they're there?
They won't be there for that long.
No, they're going to leave. I'm like, fuck this. I still don't have abs.
They're going to blame you for all of it.
Yeah, as long as you give them abs, man.
You're set.
That was actually something I used to teach at the university. I considered it, you know, borderline politically incorrect to say in a university setting, although nowadays with the university just, I don't know, existing is politically incorrect or some shit. But that's why your boy's out. and we're done. people will say, you know, intake forms for personal training. Like, why do you want to personal train? Like, I want to get stronger so I can lift, like, fucking my grocery bags, or I want to be healthier. 90% plus of the time, people are lying. They want to look better naked / in clothes. And if you look good naked, you can't really look bad in clothes, I guess, unless your designer is terrible or whatever. But I only ever source the finest fabrics, John. You know how I do. And this, you know what I'm saying?
These t-shirts are nice.
I got Walmart shoes on and Walmart.
Are those real Crocs? Check you out.
Are those, what okay, are those so, shorts?
So
are those
these are
Crocsandsocks.com?
These are, first of all, Crocs and socks. People always make fun of me on the internet. Like, oh, Crocs, what the fuck, Dr. Mike? I'm like, I train at Balance MMA. You come fucking talk shit about my Crocs where I fucking train. Fuck you. No, but seriously, they look completely ridiculous, but they're so comfortable. It's so easy. For a long time, I didn't have Crocs. I had the no back loop Croc knockoffs from Walmart, motherfuckers. That's how I roll.
Well,
this is fancy shit.
If you spend all your time researching and coaching, you don't have time to worry about what your shoes look like.
Or have any idea what modern fashion looks like.
It's all right.
People are like, that doesn't look good. I'm like,
nobody's
look good?
Yeah. Nobody looks at you and thinks, like, oh, that guy hasn't been in a gym for a long time.
I usually, like, when I get into, like, a lift ride, people are like, do you work out? Like, at least half the time, I'm like, no, I just
I was born like this. I don't know.
Fuck, man. Fuck, really quick. I was flying recently, and the TSA guy, like, the head guy to check your ID, made, like, it was, like, a borderline awkward joke. He goes, all right, everything looks good, but I can't let you through because you don't have a license for those guns. And usually, I'll ride with any joke. I was like, oh my God, I have so many other great setups for that shit. But I was like, Mike, shut the fuck up. Don't say the word gun in a TSA line, because I'm going to have to explain to their boss that the agent said it first, and by then I'm like naked and have been whatever happens in the back of the TSA. But it was like, guns, huh? I'm like, can I go? He's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, oh, thank God.
Just get me out of here. Yeah.
They still strip search me.
Yeah.
Which is free.
But you enjoyed it.
I just applied for global entry. After flying hundreds of times.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So you applied, but you don't have it yet?
No, I'm going to get it.
I've heard only amazing things.
I have to go to an interview in a couple months.
Totally. Yeah. You're going to fuck that up.
Now that you've said that, yeah. You plan to see.
You better study.
Don't say this.
You show up way too nervous. Like,
Like, why do you have the beard? You're like, I don't know, why not? Get out of here, sir. Yeah, Global Entry, I've only ever heard good things. Funny enough, at this size or whatever weird body shape, the fucking scan machine, at least 50% of the time, they're like, you have something in your back. I'm like, hit it. And they always, they're super professional, too.
Hit it!
The TSA does an impressive job because they're like, sir, is it okay if I touch you on your back? I'm going to be using my hand like this way. And I'm like, fuck. I don't have any morality. You're the one with the morals. I'm like, hit it. And I'm like, I've been like, because, you know, they offer, like, if it's like the one time, like, I came up positive for bomb materials or whatever, and I'm like, right on, it's fucking baby powder. And they're like, so we need to do a full body search. Would you like a private room? And I'm like, nope, I'm good. So there's like a ton of people there, and I'm standing there like this, and the guy's like, I mean, it's much more awkward for the guy than for me, to be completely honest.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's like, I'm going to be touching your genitals with back of my hand. I'm like, bro, you can touch it with whatever the fuck you want. Not my first rodeo. He's like, I'm just kidding.
You wear the thinnest sweatpants.
Oh, yeah.
And then you just let your imagination do the work.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah.
And you just look at him afterwards.
Just stare him in the eye.
Yeah, well, like, lovingly, like you just had a moment. He's done. He's like, am I good to go? He's like, yep. I'm like,
just extend the eye contact a little long.
You're a beautiful soul.
I'll remember this moment.
I think
forever.
That gets you killed. As soon as you touch the guy, like,
he accosted me.
I'd say normally it's pretty professional, but maybe 6 months ago, for the first time, like, I felt like, oh, this is what people are talking about when, like, they say they got groped by someone who's, like, trying to be a professional, like, being pat down by a police officer, where normally they just, like, I always wear pants where there's a zipper on the thigh right here, and so every time it gets flagged, and every time I walk out, and I put it up, and they kind of just, like, pat that pocket, and then I'm out of there. It happens all the time. And then this other time, guy kind of, like, rubbed both of my legs around my knees, and then my upper thighs, and then, like, all of my upper thighs, and then kind of, like, gave me, like, a little ball lift. And then it was like, okay, you're good to go. And I was like, I just got groped.
He did
like,
that. Yep,
like
he did it.
He knows there's nothing I can do about it. And I'm not actually that offended, but now I get it. I get like what people are talking about when like, oh, that guy grabbed my ass. Like, I could tell that it wasn't him just doing his job.
I wonder
that dude gave me a little ball lift.
Why?
You know, and that made his day.
People hide shit all over though. You know? Who
totally.
Knows?
Dude, if I'm gonna hide something, it's under my ball.
But I could tell that like he wasn't actually gonna find anything. He was just wanted to touch my balls and then
love.
Move on.
Love.
Why do we have this like thing socially that if you touch someone's balls with the back of your hand, it's okay. But if it's the front of your hand, all of a sudden they're like, whoa, dude, settle down.
Hey.
I'm not signing up for this. I just wanted to go through security. Yeah. Back of the hand, have at it.
And the other way is totally bullshit. Like, you go to, like, Hong Kong, get, like, a fucking jerk massage, and the girl's, like, touching your balls with the other side of her hand, and you're like, I'm sorry. I paid for the front side. Where's your manager? I can get this at the TSA for free, bitch.
Sorry.
I just fly with some weird Chinese tea back, and all of a sudden I got a bunch of people. Fuck you. What is this? This isn't love. I didn't pay for this. I paid for this.
You got to have that negotiation up front.
That's where my Jewish nature comes in. Like, what is this? Are you serious? What's going on? I paid for front of the hand. Let me see a manager. All of a sudden, they like give me money. I make money at the fucking hand jack-off place in Hong Kong. Like, great. I own like stock of the company by the end of all.
I can't wait for your business partners to watch this show.
Nick's used to this shit.
This is what it's like being a doctor and a scientist.
Like, well, actually, all those jokes are self-deprecating, so fuck that guy.
You do play it pretty loose in the conversation. Is that do you feel like you were oppressed a little bit in academia, and now that you're out, you can just do whatever the fuck you want?
Oppressed.
They were holding you down.
So, well, that's hot. I mean, no, it's terrible. You know, I don't know if I'm comfortable using the term oppressed. It's a fine way to describe it. I wouldn't, having been from the actual Soviet Union.
Context.
Yeah, walking around with when we take like nightly walks, my dad had a cut-off ski pole because we were Jewish, and he was going to stab someone to death if they tried to kill us in the street because they were killing Jews in the street.
Oh, my God.
Moscow, 1990. You know, it's like a Cancun-type shirt. So in any case, yeah, communism blew so much ass that I don't know if I'd call it oppressed, but, and also, you know, clearly at the university, I'm under contract, so I can just fucking leave anytime I want. But the modern university system, especially when we got into I taught at Temple, which is a very, very nice school, but there is definitely this, I don't know, call it like a stench of uber political correctness that you start questioning
anything you say as potentially offensive. And offending someone at the university level is a worse crime than anything, apparently. It's the worst possible thing you do is offend somebody.
And it seems phenomenally easy to do.
Oh, yeah, totally. And you guys have been talking to me for long enough to realize I have all sorts of fun things to say that most people consider radically offensive. So I really did. Yeah, I taught the university, and I had to do a lot of, you know, like when someone says some shit, and you're like, can't say that. I had to do a lot of that shit. One time I got on a feedback form, I mentioned anorexia, and I didn't make a joke about it. I was like, unless you're anorexic, in which case. And then I went on like a 20-minute long rant about how serious body dysmorphic disorders were and about how anytime we make even a remote attempt at humor with them, we have to couch that in a totality of an environment of careful thought, of incredible compassion, and of, you know, attending to the scientific principles behind diagnosing and treating these disorders. That whole bullshit didn't do a fucking thing because they still got written up for that shit. Somebody in the class was like, I was super offended that he referenced anorexia in this way. And I was like, okay. Like, it was just nowhere to go with that. So after that incident, that was like relatively early. I just like, yeah, made way fewer jokes than I could have, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You have a deep academic background, deeper than most. And I get, I think Doug gets a lot of these questions too, is people are like, oh, what should I do if I want to be a really great coach? Should I go the academic route or should I just start coaching? What's your recommendation for that?
So it depends
and,
on what, like,
and what are you going to find in the academic setting that you're not going to find, all that kind of stuff?
I think a basic degree in like biology, physiology, something like that is good, just so you can know the body and not just fall for total dumb shit. Like if someone asks you like, hey, why is like fit tea stupid and doesn't burn fat? If you're like, oh, maybe it does though, you know, you have a problem. Like you need to know basic bio, basic phys to understand muscle function, adaptation, all that other stuff. After that, a master's degree in strength and conditioning related field can be an advantage. In the modern US landscape, it's a huge advantage because that's how you get interned into strength and conditioning profession. Mm-hmm. And a lot of strength and conditioning coaches are hired only if you have a master's degree and you have had formal D1, D2, D3 internship experience. Because let's be honest, if you want to do collegiate strength and conditioning, if you want to do professional strength and conditioning for teams, you almost certainly have had to have done collegiate. Collegiate's really where it's at because you can branch out from so many other places. I mean, how many people at regular gyms will pay you for strength and conditioning coaching if you are I used to coach for Miami, like their football team or whatever. People are like, oh, that's amazing, of course.
Oh, yeah.
So if you do the collegiate route, which is a recommended route, it's a good idea, then going for a master's degree is probably a good idea. I in some sense, maybe not wish it was different, but I think it's totally possible to prepare someone to be a good strength coach in an undergraduate career, but most undergraduate degree programs are not specific enough, right? Most undergraduate programs are just exercise science, and then the master's is what teaches you strength and conditioning. Do you learn a lot in the classroom about strength and conditioning? No. There's usually just a couple programs in the United States that actually teach you stuff in the classroom, but that's where you get the internships. So if people, and they do, message me on Facebook or Instagram and something like that, oh, sorry, don't message me on Instagram. I don't check DMs.
It'll get lost.
I don't check DMs. I do check all my Facebook messages, so you can holler.
What about
at me.
The dick pics?
Send those anywhere, bro.
Saves them, moves on.
You kidding me? I'll go out looking for it that weren't even sent to me. So, and then, so when people ask me and they're like, you know, I want to do this exact question, I want to get into coaching, what should I do? I'm usually like, you know, if you're very serious about your profession, I would recommend an undergraduate degree in the biological sciences or movement sciences, kinesiology, and then a master's degree program at a place where it allows you a ton of internship experience actually coaching athletes and teams. What I never want to see is individuals that got a master's degree or even higher and have never worked with athletes. They're like, no, I'm ready to be a coach. We're like, who have you coached? Like, well, I haven't coached yet. So you don't know anything, right? You know some book shit, which is nice. You can just read like 4 books. You know, just bought by yourself and know almost as much as you would out of a degree program. It's the experience that counts. And the way into that experience a lot of times is a master's program where you get to work for free for a football team. And after that, referrals. I mean, holy crap. You know, the coach knows you and you're applying to Villanova or something. And he's like, I know the head guy there. I'll put in a good word. Boom. Hire the next day. Otherwise, if you're a strength and conditioning coach and you want to break into the formal profession, I don't care how many like awesome clients you've trained, how many really good MMA guys you've helped with. You're not going to go work at a fucking college, because remember, the person hiring you at a college isn't actually the coach, it's the athletic director. And he's going to be like, so where's your resume? And you're like, am I hired? He's going to be like, I don't get the joke. I'm like, shit. So if you want to be a strength coach at the highest levels, I do recommend going up to a master's degree.
What about somebody who wants to be like a top level CrossFit coach, or you know, a strength coach in the strength sports, powerlifting, weightlifting?
Sure.
All
I
that
think
kind of stuff.
Some academic accomplishments help bolster your resume, but you can learn almost everything you need to just by yourself, reading books. I would say if you want to become a strength coach in any of those sports or a coach in any of those sports, you have to do two things. Balls deep into reading everything you can at incrementally higher and higher technical levels. And I've written some of these books, like Scientific Principles of Strength Training is one of our like more famous books that James and I co-authored, and with Chad Wesley Smith, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't know, he may have heard of that.
We did a whole show on that book.
Oh, no Chad. Shit. Fuck.
Yeah.
Chad.
Google it.
Chad, that's right. There you go. Chad, I didn't know you guys talked to him about that shit. I didn't see any of that money. Chad owes me money.
Me neither.
Like, wait, somebody got paid? So like Scientific Principles.
Who's making
training,
the money here? Yeah.
There's like,
we're going to drive up and see Chad here in an hour. Yeah.
I'm not going to fight him for the
Chad's
money.
Down the door. We need all four of us to take it down.
It's literally going to take all four of us. So,
I saw a planter or two where it was like four lions right. trying to take down a water buffalo and they couldn't do it. I feel like that would be
oh.
us.
Oh. That was serious.
Dude, that was amazing
stuff right
You're
there,
dude.
Superhero.
If I had my chopsticks, I would have grabbed him.
Would there be like a lesson of wisdom after that?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Miyagi-san.
Yeah.
For those who are only listening, we had an enormous killer bee come in.
It's the size of a fucking coffee cup.
That was the sound of four meatheads freaking out over one bee.
It was a bee. You know, my fiance and I love each other dearly. And one time, this is a very special moment in our relationship. One time we were walking down the street in Philly, and it was like mid-spring, and a bumblebee flew up to us. We each respectively left each other behind. And we realized that nothing is going to test our relationship except for a bumblebee. And we will sell that bitch down the river for that shit. If only before she does it to me, because she would ghost me in an instant. As soon as the bee came, we literally ran in opposite directions. I was like, fuck, get her.
At least you have it in common.
I don't do, right? Totally. Exactly. We're just a scummy. I don't deal with bugs at all. What the fuck were we saying earlier?
I don't know.
I think another reason, a lot of people could learn so much about strength and conditioning is training with people that don't have the background. It's one of the reasons this guy's a freaking ninja when it comes to everything that goes on in the gym. When watching him move, it's perfect form every single time. All the levers are in the right place.
He's talking about Doug.
Yeah, that's Doug. I don't come from that. Mine was just kind of, I just figured this thing out by doing it all wrong. Mm-hmm. And if you can surround yourself with people that are very experienced and very knowledge in the piece that you don't have,
sure.
you're going to learn sure. at a significantly faster rate.
Yeah. So there's the practical stuff. So first, just real quick to finish up the book stuff, Scientific Principles of Training, there's a bunch of books like it, bunch of books on nutrition. Read that shit. Read every article you can. Learn. No shit. Don't just be an ignorant asshole. Just start like a fucking coach, man. I'm not a fucking book nerd. Like, well, all the greatest coaches in the world were just lifetime learners, so you're never going to be one of those, right? So do that. And then on the practical side, do as much as you can. Involve yourself. It baffles me when people have a coach that hasn't themselves either done that sport or a very similar sport or no sport at all. What the fuck? Like, yeah. There are powerlifting coaches that haven't competed in powerlifting at their genetic abilities high level. Like, I literally remember when I used to low bar squat all the time, my elbows would hurt. And if they didn't hurt, my wrists would hurt if I changed the stance or the hand position. And if I changed it more to get the wrists and elbows out of the way, your shoulders would hurt. So, like, if I didn't know that shit, how the fuck would I program for guys squatting way more than I ever did? Yeah. At 800 pounds, be like, oh, yeah, we'll just do 5x5. Like, you don't do 5x5 with 800 pounds. I don't give a shit who the fuck you are, right? Mm-hmm. So, practical experience on yourself. And lastly, tons of experience with everyone. Yeah. I think a lot of people get this idea like, I want to be an elite strength coach. I got to work with the best athletes. Fuck that. Work with everyone. Because I'll tell you this, if you can teach a fucking soccer mom how to do a squat properly or how to do a clean or some shit like that, teaching gifted McAthlete is going to be the easiest fucking thing you've ever done. One of, when I got to work with D1 volleyball players at ETSU, I remember teaching a stiff-legged deadlift to a girl in one 10-second conversation. I was like, you're going to stick your hips back, and you're going to not bend your knees much, and you're going to go up and down. And she does this, and she goes, she actually went much deeper. Is her hamstring flexibility sweet? And she goes, and I'm like, that's it.
I'm out.
You do it. I was like, do it again. And she's like, boom, she did the exact same thing. And I was like, we're done. And literally moved on to another girl. I was like, holy shit. Like, you guys do realize all of us have coached stiff legged deadlifts here. Like, you're like, okay, now I want you to push your butt back. They're like, you're like, oh my God, are you dying? It's like a wilting flower or some shit.
Oh, yeah.
Another reason to regular coach people, at a university is you might be able to teach volleyball players RDLs. Which that's probably one of the
side benefit.
My favorite exercises to teach.
You know, we're coaches here, sir. We're not, you know, we're not. I mean, I'm not into all this perversion stuff.
And what do you think he was talking about?
I'm not.
Well, talking about, yeah, we were talking about fitness.
Yeah.
Well,
they're just such
it's fit good for the ACL. Yeah.
I'm pure-hearted, pure-minded person who's actually sworn off any and all sexual activity. My fiance thinks we're waiting for marriage. We're waiting for nothing. I'm never going to do it.
I'm just done.
I hope she doesn't hear this podcast.
Honey, don't listen to that podcast, especially the end. Yeah. You're going to find out some stuff.
Yikes.
Yeah.
She knows all this shit. She knows I'm fucked up. Yeah.
So, keep it interesting.
No, for sure.
Oh, man. Today's been a real pleasure. Where can people find more about what you're up to?
Yeah, nowhere. I don't want to be found. I'm going off the grid, folks. I've had enough internet fame. Let's see, which one's first? RenaissancePeriodization.com for all cool. We do like diet templates and stuff and training templates and books, and people seem to like that a lot more than they like me, as far as Instagram's concerned anyway. So that's good stuff. At RP Strength is our Renaissance Instagram. Tons of good stuff on there. At RPDRMIKE, RP Dr. Mike is my Instagram. Mostly pictures of me in compromising half-naked positions. Bodybuilding. Shitty pictures of food. Although I realized that to take good. So Chad Wesley Smith was on my ass about this shit. He was like, your food pictures suck. Cause I would take food pictures and people would be like, are you eating shit? And I'm like, damn it. That's a cheeseburger. You guys know this? You have to zoom in on food a lot. And then it just like all the morsels and shit. And people are like, oh my God, that's so good. And I'm like, trust me, it was not that good.
Lights are above. Your hands are in the middle.
Yes.
Shadows are below. Watch out.
And if you have iPhone 7 or above, portrait mode. But you got to get a good distance from your food.
Damn, dude.
Yeah.
So
next level shit.
Check out the Instagram story every time Mike eats.
There you go.
Yeah.
Don't check out mine because it looks like shit.
Yeah, it just sucks when you're at a restaurant with low light, you know. That portrait mode doesn't work.
You get pissed. You're like, this is bullshit. Why are there no lights here? Like, sir, it's a dining establishment. Like, no, this is an Instagram establishment. Turn on the fucking lights so I can fucking
focus. I do feel like an asshole. I'm in, like, this restaurant. Oh, I got my phone out. I'm that fucking guy. Everyone in the restaurant's looking at me.
That's it. You're like, you got, like, fucking studio lights, like, all set up around your food. People are like, so you have a permit for this? Be like, I'm an Instagram celebrity. So that's permit for life.
I like to be a role model to show people what's possible.
Exactly. Exactly.
In the world
my
of food.
Life is a show for so that you guys can be entertained.
And to make people jealous.
Yeah. The purpose of life. So, and then lastly, Facebook. Mike Israetel on Facebook. It's a public account. Come troll me. Come follow me. I do answer a whole bunch of questions on there. Facebook is where to get more of my intellectual contents because I'll be that cocksucker that posts like a 5.3 mini sub-point intellectual trieste on strength and conditioning and yeah, I don't have any real life.
You're actually adding quality content to Facebook?
I'm trying. That's some people are like, TLDR. I'm like, fucking murder you. So anyway, that's my shit.
Oh, my God. Thank you for joining us today. This was one of the more fun conversations I think I've had here.
Well, Yahoo. Thanks so much for having me, gentlemen. Yeah. And by the way, from all of us that don't live in San Diego, fuck you guys for this weather. I have to go back to Philadelphia where literally Grandfather Freeze or whatever. I believe Mr. Freeze is actually our mayor currently.
I am sunburned right now.
Yeah.
In January. Good job, Anders. Crazy. All right, Anders, where can people find you and what you're up to?
Come to movement-rx.com. Dr. Teresa and I are combining strength training, physical therapy, assessments, mobility, stability, exercises to get you out of knee, shoulder, low back pain. Just solutions for gym owners, functional fitness athletes. Come and hang out with us at movement-rx.com.
Where you bet. Doug?
If you want to get my thoughts on fitness, you can go to DougLarsonFitness.com. I have content on there. You can come work with me. You can come to my seminars, etc. So go to DougLarsonFitness.com.
And if you're interested in more stuff I'm up to, go over to TheBledsoeShow.com. I've got a whole other podcast where we discuss a lot of nonsense that you're going to really enjoy. So
I'll see you there.
Yes. I think I'll be interviewing you over there soon. We actually have some other topics that we share interest. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun. I imagine it'll be economics and mushrooms and science.
The economics of mushroom science.
Put it all together.
Yeah. And if you enjoyed this show, which you made it to the end, which I know you did, go over to iTunes, 5-star review, positive comment. Head over to YouTube, subscribe there. Cool videos going up all the time. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for making it all the way to the end of the show. If you liked the show, which I know you did, please go share it on Facebook, Instagram, or whatever social media channel you happen to be loving at the moment. Pinterest, Twitter?
Tumblr.
Share it on Tumblr.
Next on Barbell Shrugged, the funniest show we've done to date with Ryan Fisher. Ha ha ha!